friends, happy Tuesday, and welcome to the second episode of the fourth season of the Friends of France podcast. A week flew by just like that. I hope you were able to listen to last week's episode with the incredible Nina Cheng, the founder of the Eastern Philosophy, a homemade and curated traditional Chinese medicine company. We talked about all things traditional Chinese medicine, or TCM, the history of it, herbs, roots, food, kanji, and lightly touched upon our topic for today, as they are very well connected. TCM, and its thousands of years of history, has many known healing modalities, like Qigong, which we will talk more about next week, cupping. I'm sure TikTok watchers here have been seeing those Asian athletes with circular Bruce-like marks on their back. As I mentioned, herbs and roots like ginseng. And our topic for today, which is probably the most well-known modality of them all, acupuncture. I think the very first time I heard of or had an image of acupuncture was from the movie Kung Fu Panda, when Po, the panda, was getting acupuncture done by Mantis, and Mantis was like, no, it's not easy finding the right nerve points because under all of this, and Po was like, fat? And Mantis was like, no, fur. And then Po gets paralyzed, making a funny face in front of Tigress, and Mantis was like, oh, he accidentally tweaked his facial nerve. Po then face plants and reveals all the needles behind his back. To be honest, this is my very first impression of acupuncture, and I think it scarred me. I was like, I will never get acupuncture. But fast forward to 17 years later. Yes, the first movie was back from 2008. I am so old. And I finally had my first mini acupuncture session a few months ago during an event. And honestly, it was such a great experience. But what is acupuncture? What are the needles all about? What are the nerve points that Mantis was talking about? Well, you've come to the right place. Today, we're joined by an expert guest to talk about all things acupuncture. From its history, proposed benefits, risks, safety, the needles itself, and of the like. I am so honored to be joined today by Dr. Lauren Kuei, a doctor of acupuncture and Chinese medicine, and board-certified acupuncturist, herbalist, and registered yoga teacher at Nava Wellness NYC, and was previously featured in The Strategist by New York Magazine. Stressed? In pain? Well, it seems like acupuncture has something promising for us. You know, sometimes we just all need a little help. Get it? Needle? Ha ha. Okay, let me take you to our episode. I hope you enjoy and learn a lot. Let's go. Sometimes, all it takes is a spark. Something crisp, bold, and refreshingly different. That's where Sanzo Sparkling Water comes in. Founded by Queens-born Filipino-American Sandro Rocco, Sanzo has a simple goal: to bridge cultures and invite communities to explore and celebrate bold Asian flavors by celebrating unique Asian fruits made with the real fruits themselves, clean ingredients, 100% natural sweeteners, and without artificial additives. Whether these flavors are a taste of home or a source of discovery, Sanzo is excited to bring you authentic flavors in the most delicious way they know how. So go ahead, pick your fruit, lychee, yuzu, mandarin, and much more, and get 10% off your first order at drinksanzo.com. That's drink, S-A-N-Z-O.com, with the code FRANZ10. That's FRANZ10. Valid until December 14, 2025, and limited to one use per customer.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Friends of France podcast, season 4. I can't believe that, again, we're here in this new space. And by new space, I mean very new conversations. And our very special guest today is one that I've been so excited to have on. I think for almost a year now, we've been talking since we planned this, and it's finally here. I'm so honored to have our special guest on today to talk about a world that I've always been so interested in, that I've always also wanted to try. That's a hint. And so I'm so excited to learn more about it today. Dr. Lauren Kuei, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
If you could first please introduce yourself to our audience. Thank you so much.
Sure. Of course. My name is Dr. Lauren Kui, and I'm a doctor of acupuncture and Chinese medicine here in New York City. My background is a bit mixed. I would say I grew up in Taiwan most of my childhood, and I've been living and working in the U.S. for over 2 decades. So the U.S. also feels very much like my adopted home at this point. So there's a little bit of a cultural background there. And my road that led me to becoming a doctor of acupuncture and Chinese medicine, it's a bit long-winded. I've been on the receiving end of the medicine of East Asian medicine, EAM, in general since childhood. Just pure luck, you know, that's how my folks, my parents would approach things with us as kids. So I was always familiar with this way of treating, never really given it much thought of becoming a practitioner of doctor of acupuncture and Chinese medicine until much later into my mid-30s, where I was sort of looking for a career shift after working with the body a lot through yoga and yogic practice, yogic teaching, and then subsequent sort of anatomy and physiology investigations through yoga and movement practice that led me to sort of just become more and more curious about the human body in general and the possibility and the healing possibility that lies within. So ultimately, I looked into acupuncture school and I looked into physical therapies and decided to go with the EAM route, the East Asian medicine route, for the versatility of it. And I've never looked back and I've never been happier.
I love that. No, like I said, when we were talking for the first time for our introductory call, this is a whole world that I'm not really familiar with, because I guess in antithesis to your experience, having grown up in the United States my whole life, it's like all I've known is Western medicine, right? All I've known is emergency room and the hospital floor, and growing up with my mom, who was a nurse in the OR and also in the post-anesthesia unit. My brain and my experience with the body and healing and health and wellness is all encapsulated within the realms of Western medicine, where it's very much, and I know we'll talk more about it, it's very much more of like, here, assessment, diagnosis, and then here's an intervention through, let's say, mostly pharmacologic treatments, right? Or surgical modalities. This world of yours, of like EAM, Eastern Asian medicine, is one that I really don't know anything much about. And I guess to tell my audience as an introduction as well, I went to this like retreat resort place a year or so ago, where one of the classes that you could attend was about herbalism and botany. And I was like, what is this world? And there was also one for astrology and then more into like the Eastern medicine route. So while I was formulating the season, the new season of Friends of France, I was like, wow, I think this is one field, a domain that even I have not really touched upon. And so it would be great if we could have experts like you to share it to the audience. And so thank you for sharing your experience and your background. I know you were saying that you were looking for a career shift and then you were, I guess, torn between PT school and also acupuncture. Do you remember if there was a specific reason or time or a circumstance that made you choose acupuncture as opposed to physical therapy?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was funny because initially in my sort of at the onset of sort of me wanting to go back to school and switch careers and pivot, my natural inclination was PT school, because I've been sort of dealt with movement practices through yoga, through teaching yoga. I'm a climber myself for over 2 decades. So there's just a lot of physical and athleticism in my life that I'm quite familiar with. So initially I thought, oh, PT, obviously, that's the obvious choice here. And then the more I kind of look into it, and this is by no means trying to discredit PT or anything, it was just my thought at the time, is that it's great to be treating all these musculoskeletal conditions and rehabilitation work, but I wanted more. And the EAM offered, like you said, herbalism and sort of just there. So there is a limb of pharmacological aspect to the EAM that we do through herbal medicine. So it just opened a little bit wider of a door than just sort of being limited to treating musculoskeletal conditions that I sort of come to conclude with PT research.
Yeah, so. Definitely. Yeah, and it's true. I mean, I feel like the world of AEM is so diverse. For the past few months, I've been going through a list of different modalities in AEM, and I was like, oh my gosh, I've never even heard of some of these things before. Yeah, but one of the practices that I definitely have heard about, have seen, my friends had talked about, was the art and the practice of acupuncture. And even then, I would be honest and say, until like probably last year, all I thought was, oh, acupuncture, like needles that I know is used for pain. How? I'm not exactly sure. What I do remember, though, was during nursing school years ago, we had probably a 5-minute glance on acupuncture, and that was about it. I think they were talking about, not even from the premise of what you're going to talk about the yin and yang. It's literally from a very Western medicine lens of like, the needle's here, it's supposed to combat the spinothalamic pain pathways, and that was it. It's like just a modality for pain intervention that is used in some cultures. It's how they introduced it. But then, obviously, I've read more about it. We were talking about it. I was like, whoa, it's not just that. It's its own complete world. It's an ancient practice that has worked for centuries. And so I'll bring the stage to what is rightfully yours, Dr. Kuei, your expertise. What is acupuncture and what is the history behind this ancient practice?
Yeah, so I think acupuncture is probably the most known modality within the EAM vocabulary. People sort of have heard the word by now in 2025, especially in the New York area and in a city, in an urban setting, really. And you know, the pain aspect is sort of its most well-known therapeutic effect, if you will. But you know, even just looking through the lens of pain, right, there's so many different types of pain, right? Is this a migraine headache? Is this menstrual related discomfort in the low abdomen? Is this musculoskeletal pain from overuse, right? Or is this fibromyalgia, where it's more of a systemic nerve sort of pain source, right? So they're even within sort of this pain category, it's a mixed bag in of itself. So acupuncture, for the most part, utilizes sterile, single-use solid needles, and we tap into various points, places in the body to get at the nervous system to facilitate healing processes within the body. So there's no, since it's a solid needle, there's actually no fluid exchange of any sort. So there's nothing being injected or put into the body. So it's very different than the hypodermic needle that we're perhaps very familiar with in the Western realm. So that's the big difference, first of all. What it does, however, by tapping into the nervous system and sort of tuning the nervous system, we facilitate healing processes and seek out imbalances and just recalibrate them throughout time, throughout a few sessions, typically. And a little bit about the history of acupuncture. It came out of the needs of healing the body, really. It sounds simple, but that's ultimately the shared human reality, that we get sick, we try to figure out ways to be not sick and heal the body with any resources that we can find. At the beginning in China, pandemic and epidemics were very much part of life and presentation. So acupuncture is largely used to treat pandemic and epidemic presentations, febrile diseases, etc. It's now since evolved and progressed into treating modern day disease presentations, from, you know, still pandemics these days to, you know, maybe the more newer presentations such as autoimmune conditions to this day.
Yeah, so it's definitely a very expansive practice with a very deep and rich history that I guess goes through generations, right? I mean, from pandemics and epidemics from days of old to even now. I know you were mentioning something about pathways, and I think this is why I really wanted to get at the crux of it, is the premise behind acupuncture. Because I know, like from what I said, back in nursing school, we were talking about pathways, but I know it's a very Western look at what acupuncture really is. Like, we have to hear the practices from its actual root, right? From the Eastern Asian medicine lens, right? Mm-hmm. Not from the lens of, I guess, more so Western researchers trying to explain what this practice is. So what is the premise behind acupuncture and the pathways that you're mentioning?
So I think the pathways is most likely the channel system that we've sort of, the EAM has developed and mapped for the body, essentially. And very much like a map, or sort of, I always like to actually imagine the New York City subway map, you know, so various lines converging. Certain hubs are more central and big, such as Grand Central or Penn Station, right? These are big sort of connector areas. And it's the body kind of operates similarly in a way where there's certain areas where it's just highly congested and it's high traffic, and whereas other areas, it's just less so. You know, so it's sort of the channel system can be accessed, I would say, very effectively through all these little, quote, stations, if you will, or points. And acupuncture point names has been adapted and translated into sort of the modern Western form in terms of channel followed by a number. It's essentially a numbering system, which distracts a little bit from each point name in its original Chinese form and character and its meaning, right? Because now it's sort of being reduced to a symbol of the channel itself, followed by a number system. And again, I understand why it evolved that way. It's mostly for education, for the sort of discussion and spread of acupuncture and EAM practices. But I think it's important to not lose sight that it goes much deeper. Each of these little stations in the body, if you will, has significant meanings, and they're mostly fitting with how bodily processes and functions develop and evolve. And there's also one limb, you mentioned cosmology during your little retreat experience that you have. So there is one limb where, you know, it goes beyond the body into the larger, the macro cosm of the universe, right? So we can zoom out and we can zoom in. So it's quite flexible that way. And I think it's sort of also just like acupuncture names in its original form contains meaning, the body exists within the universe, just like points exist within our bodies, right? So again, it's that larger scale, scale up, scale down type of expansion and flexibility that really the medicine provides.
What if your night out could come with a smarter tomorrow? Meet DayGuard, a Korean-inspired functional jelly stick designed to support liver health, hydration, gut balance, and vitamin replenishment when drinking alcohol. With science-backed ingredients like DHM, L-cysteine, prickly pear extract, L-arginine, and B vitamins, each convenient and delicious stick helps your body break down alcohol and reduce next-day sluggishness. Just take one stick before your first drink of the night and support your body's natural recovery so you can wake up refreshed. Get 10% off your first purchase at dayguard.com, that's DayGuard.com, with the code FRANZ, that's FRANZ. One-time use and cannot be combined with other codes. What if your home could feel more like you? Meet Emmy, a New York-based home fragrance brand founded in 2020 by Erica and Mark. Inspired by the scents they grew up with, like steamed rice, tropical fruits, and temple incense, Emmy celebrates fragrance as memory, culture, and ritual. From design-forward candles to reed diffusers and hand soaps, each product is crafted with clean ingredients, wood wicks, and thoughtful formulations. More than scent, Emmy creates atmosphere and belonging, storytelling in wax, in water, in air. So whether it's lighting a candle or washing your hands, small rituals are transformed into something intentional, making your space warm, alive, and entirely yours. Get 15% off at emmenyc.com. That's emmenyc.com with code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. Find your story, find your atmosphere, find it with Emmy.
I I was looking through your website for Nava Wellness that we'll talk about too, is that there's the concept of homeostasis, right? That I guess acupuncture is trying to achieve that sense of balance and I guess clearing up those tolled roads and those busy subway systems. And I guess that's why, especially even me and I guess a huge part of the population is so interested in the practice of acupuncture and the benefits that it can provide, right, to this person seeking help in whatever it may be. You know, we've been talking largely about pain and acupuncture's benefits and the hope it can provide for someone who has pain. And it's like you said, different types of pain. Like, what kind of pain is it? I was invited to an event, I think a few months ago, for my friend's birthday, and she collaborated with an acupuncture service where the founder of that service stated that she started this acupuncture practice space because of her own issues with reproduction in the past, and it has helped her. Acupuncture has helped her in that regard. So when I was hearing that, I was like, huh? There's other benefits to acupuncture than just pain. I think I was so small-minded when it comes to acupuncture and just Eastern Asian medicine as a whole, where I didn't even know, I guess, the expanse of the benefits that it could provide. So can you please tell us, even the different types of pain, what other things and or conditions or just benefits in general does acupuncture provide?
Absolutely. Yeah, you brought up fertility, and that is, I would extend that into sort of a menstrual support, right? So all sort of women-specific care in that regard, and sort of the gynecological aspects. So I always like to say, first of all, and this kind of brings our conversation back to pain a little bit, the menstrual pain. It's completely not natural and unnecessary, even though most people experience it. Most people think mild pain is really no big deal with periods, right? We're so used to it because it's such a prevalent presentation, but it doesn't make it what it could be. And what it could be is it's just any other day for those in their reproductive ages, you know, to experience monthly periods. It should really just be like any other day. You should be able to go about your day pain-free, right? So first of all, that's an aspect where acupuncture and sometimes herbal medicine can kind of come into play really effectively. So in terms of the menstrual pain aspect, there's a lot of what we call blood stasis. And you can think of blood stasis as sort of, you know, Grand Central being overloaded with foot traffic. It just cannot take on any more bodies, right? So all the needlework and the clinical work and the herbal stuff we do is to sort of free up some of that congestion, remove some of those obstacles. And we're not talking, you know, taking the hammer into the body and sort of forcefully remove things. Really, even, you know, just removing 5% of that concentration of congestion will allow the flow of that particular station to be much smoother. And then with a smooth flow comes a pain-free living and experience ultimately down the line. So that's sort of the big picture as to how, for instance, acupuncture and herbal medicine can address menstrual pain. And then in terms of the fertility aspect, if you regulate the period and if you have a great time with your period, the fertility is going to come, pending that, you know, the sperm diet also checks out. Right. So it takes two. So that's what I would say. A lot of the fertility and stress surrounding fertility, I would say, can be sort of rooted to sort of this very rudimentary regulation of the cycle.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Like, even just 5% relief, right? Like, just so many people have gone through so many modalities outside of the Eastern Asian medicine practices, and people are just looking for an inch amount of relief, right?
I would say, yeah, rather than, you know, piling on more things, trying to fix the problem, the congestion, you know, sometimes the solution is to just remove, let everybody breathe a little bit better, a little bit easier. And then once the flow is restored, it'll just continue.
Yeah.
Right? That momentum built, ride the wave in that way.
Yeah, and I'm sure like acupuncture with these relief that it provides has changed so many people's lives, and also not just life in itself, but like quality of life, right? The ability to live pain-free and going on about their day without feeling that immense pain that they've been struggling with, right? And even then, even with the amount of people who have been going to acupuncture, getting acupuncture and having relief, you know, there's still a lot of hesitation, I guess, questions surrounding the field. And I think, especially in this platform of mine, and I mentioned to this to you previously, but the past 3 seasons, I've just, each guest has stacked and stacked upon researchers and clinical scientists and different members of the Western medical field. And a lot of what we talked about was when it comes to scientific research and data surrounding a specific field or specific practice. I'm curious, do we have any scientific research behind the field of acupuncture?
There's actually lots, overwhelming amount of research. There's been an uptick of evidence-based data collection in the form of clinical trials, systematic reviews, and metadata analysis regarding the clinical efficacy with acupuncture here in the U.S. as well as in China, pretty much since the early 90s. So that's going on almost 40. Some areas of study thus far focus on pain conditions, like we've mentioned, while others go beyond pain into fields like post-stroke rehabilitation, cancer treatment support, and autoimmune regulation for Hashimoto thyroiditis or ankylosing spondylitis type of conditions alike. Here in the U.S., we have the NCCIH, the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health. I know that's a mouthful, but it is one of the branch under the NIH and the federal government who deals specifically with what they deemed complementary and integrative health, meaning acupuncture falls into this homeopathy, chiropractic medicine, physical therapy, I believe, and occupational therapy also kind of falls into this realm as well. Anything sort of non-mainstream, non-Western can be sort of put into this category of complementary and integrative health. And they've been established firmly within the federal government since 1998. So one of this establishment's role is to help answer important scientific and public health questions within the context of whole person health, right? Rather than looking at disease presentations or, you know, surgical fixes. It's really sort of zoomed out and look at the body as a whole. So we do have resource and establishments even here in the U.S. for quite a while now.
Yeah, and I think that's so important to know because I feel like, and I can say this myself being from the Western medicine side, people with the Western medicine profession are very quick to judge and tear down non-Western medicine practices and modalities, right? They're like, there's no research. Oh, it's pseudoscience. It's whatever, right? Sometimes we just have to take ourselves out of our own bubble and also see the amount of research there is outside of the borders of the United States, right?
Absolutely. There's great research out of China. There's great research out of Australia. You know, it's really in the sort of very digital world, right? The sharing of information has become ever more readily available. So that opens up even more doors, right? Yeah. For more data and more research and more possibilities.
I agree. And I think I mentioned this to you too. And I know you have said this as well. One of our guests in this season as well, she was a physician in Germany, and she was telling me how her hospital, which is Western medicine, is right across a traditional Chinese medicine hospital. And the doctors from each side refer patients to each other. I mean, what a beautiful symbiosis between both worlds, right?
That is the hope, right? That is the hope, the sort of the full integration. And I will say, actually, that is sort of how I grow up with my relationship with medicine, not just East Asian medicine, but just medicine in general, East, West, whatever you want to call it. The way sort of the healthcare system was structured in Taiwan is that it's still hospital-based medical practices, but each department within the hospital is quite varied. So I played quite a bit of basketball as a kid, so I had a lot of sprained ankles. my mom would take me to the hospital, you know, this building that is the hospital, right? And we would go to radiology, get an x-ray, make sure nothing's broken. And then they would send me to acupuncture to get a treatment. And
there we go.
As far as this particular hospital settings concerned, radiology is just one department and EAM is the other. Right. So it's just all this big umbrella of medicine, of hospital care that one can have access to. The U.S. is different. It's a different system. It's a different size of a country. So I'm well aware of the differences. But it is interesting to sort of look at all these various possibilities in Germany, in Taiwan, and sort of these limbs of medical practices and what is possible, right? That said, though, in at least in New York City, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center has their own acupuncture in-house facility, right? So it is being integrated. On a maybe a smaller scale, maybe not as, you know, large as a all hospital setting.
Yeah.
But it is happening. So
I love
that. Exciting.
That is the future. Well, essentially that should be the future, right? And I think even then, you know, people's hesitation will always be existent. You know what they say? You can be the sweetest and humblest peach in the world, and there'll be one person who doesn't like peaches, right?
Of course. Yeah, I think it's sort of just like you said, right? That taps into sort of the personal aspects that medical practice and healthcare can be, right? Like you said, maybe acupuncture isn't for everyone. Then go to a different pain specialist. Maybe pharmaceutical meds works for you. Then go that route, right? It's just another tool in the toolbox. And what works and fits your body the best is going to look a little different from people to people, from patient to patient.
Super agree. And I think one hesitation also when it comes to acupuncture, from what I heard, is because some people are afraid of needles, right?
And I always laugh. I'm thinking, you're okay with blood draw and the large gauges of the hypodermic needles, but you're afraid of this hair, sort of hairline, fine, solid needle that is meant, really designed and meant to part tissue rather than to tear. So it's just funny, but, you know, I don't expect everyone to have that kind of understanding about needles. So I think most people hear needles and they run.
Yeah, well, they hear those multiple needles across the body and they run. But please let us know, is there any known side effects of acupuncture given that these are needles?
Sure. So the modern needle that I'm mentioning are single-use, sterile out of the manufacturer. Once, depending on how the needle is packaged, some of them are single pack, some of them are sort of a 10-pack or a 5-pack, so a cluster. So the moment you open the package, they become clean. They haven't been used, but once they've come into contact with air, it's no longer technically sterile at that point, at which point the handle portion of the needle is what I hold on to for as a tool. And then there's the tip, which is the insertion part that goes into the patient's body. And then, like I said, it's single use. So every needle gets recycled into Sharps container and reprocessed and upcycled into new needles that way. So there's sort of very little cross-contamination as far as sort of disease transmission, much less percentage than a hypodermic, which is hollow on the inside. So that's first of all. But that said, we are working with needles and multiple needles most often. So bleeding is one of the most common side effects, if you will, which will lead to some bruising most likely. And then the other aspect is sort of anatomical knowledge of the practitioner, right? We definitely want to avoid the lung, for example, which can be quite close to the surface for some folks. So puncturing organ is another concern, but again, a trained, certified professional acupuncturist really should not be dealing with these extreme cases of incidents with any regularity.
Yeah, those are good to know, and especially when it comes to bleeding. And I also say this to my patients as well, because, you know, sometimes you give like a shot or even a very, very, very light touch of a needle and someone bleeds versus another person who won't bleed, right? You know, everyone's body is different. Your vessel system, some people are just prone to bleeding compared to others, right? And it's just,
absolutely.
We'll find out there. And then speaking of, now that we've talked about the potential side effects and we'll also talk about, you know, the research behind it and the benefits as well as the premise behind acupuncture, I'm curious, let's say, what should one expect during an acupuncture session? It's my first time getting acupuncture. Can you relay step by step how my session will look like?
Sure. I generally begin with a thorough intake of patient history and reason for seeking care before moving into treatment. The first treatment is always exciting. I prepare the patient by telling them where the body I would need access in terms of clothing logistics, followed up by body position of facing up or down on the table. Acupuncture and much of EAM is a physical medicine, so pulse taking generally comes in next, and a lot of palpation, a lot of sort of touch-based investigation of how the body and the tissue is settling and how the channels in the bodies are doing. So pulse and palpation will then lead me into the actual treatment portion, the actual needling portion of the treatment. And it's common to start in the lower legs, and I generally work my way up towards the upper torso, sometimes even the scalp as needed.
Yeah, actually, I did get one mini acupuncture session during that event that I was talking about. Okay, it's crazy. I know I'm a nurse and I poke people all day long. But honestly, when she pulled out the needle, I was like, I'm quite scared. But actually, once they put, you don't even feel it. I'm yeah. like, oh.
That is a very typical first response. Is there's always the fear, and I get it completely. And then I usually tell people it's kind of like a mosquito bite, you know, like there is definitely the sort of prick that happens, but then it just dissipates less than a second. So, and people are really often surprised by that, like you were.
I was very surprised.
Yeah. So this is a very common sort of first experience, first encounter with acupuncture needles.
Yeah.
Right.
It's different from a blood draw where you feel it the whole time.
Different. Very, very different. Yeah, it really, like I said, it's a mosquito bite at best.
Pleasantly surprised. And I have to keep coming back for more. I mean, I have to go see Nava Wellness and get my acupuncture session.
Well, bye. Happy to take care of you.
Do you get red after a sip of alcohol? Well, I do. And it actually has a name. The alcohol flush reaction, and in my case, the infamous Asian glow. But something I didn't realize is that Asian glow isn't just a cosmetic issue, it's a real health risk, linked to increased cancer risk and poor alcohol metabolism. Thankfully, Join is here to help, an AAPI and woman-founded supplement brand that was created to be the most effective natural solution to support people with alcohol flush and recovery, while boosting overall health. Made with clinically studied, all-natural ingredients like glutathione, milk thistle, and B vitamins, you can now finally feel confident when you drink. Get 20% off your first order at jointhefun.com. That's JOYNTHEFUN.com with the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. Let's give the Asian glow a different meaning. What if a single cup of tea could hold a century of stories? Day Tea is a five-generation family business crafting award-winning high mountain oolong teas in Taiwan since 1918. Grown at the highest elevations, every leaf is hand-picked, all-natural, and nurtured without additives or herbicides. The result is an array of complex flavors that evolve with each steep, honored at tasting competitions in France and Japan. From premium loose leaf and tea bags, to ready-to-drink cold brew bottles, every sip is an invitation to slow down, savor, and connect. Discover tea as it's meant to be experienced. Use code FRANZ, that's FRANZ, for 10% off at daytea.co. That's daetea.co. Valid until February 14, 2026. Brew it hot, brew it cold. Take a moment for you.
I was looking through the Nava Wellness website as well, and I was surprised to see the associated modalities that you can do with acupuncture. I was seeing like dry needling and LED light therapy and herbal formula. Can you tell us more about that and how it, I guess, works alongside acupuncture or even synergistically work with it?
Yeah. So really, like I said, EAM, East Asian medicine is quite, there's many limbs, many facets to the medicine, and acupuncture is just the sort of the most well-known. I think other modalities that are potentially equally well-known would be the herbal medicine practice, because supplements, etc. And I want to say the herbal formulas in the EAM sense differs a little bit from sort of your single source supplement that you can get from, you know, your Duan Reed, for example, in that it's usually a collection of ingredients, herbs, plant-based or animal-based from time to time, and they get cooked. So there is a heat component, there is a combustion that happening, an alchemy that happens with all the herbs in a formula. And then that then gets, you know, either product into a capsule, or you can drink it in its liquid form or powder form. So there's very various forms that you can take once a formula is processed, just for convenience, but it is quite different than sort of your, you know, magnesium supplement that you can get over the counter, for example. So acupuncture, herbal medicine, another fairly well-known modality would be cupping, thanks to Michael Phelps.
Yes.
And cupping is a fantastic sort of manual therapy where we utilize negative pressure with the cups on local, on tissue, on skin, to draw up certain stagnation, certain lactic acid buildup, etc., within the tissues, and sort of bring it up to the surface so the body can kind of move it up and out. As a result, it's great for range of motion. It's great for musculoskeletal application. It's great for actually sort of cough or COVID presentations as well for the lungs, actually, and the intercostal areas. So that's acupuncture, herbal medicine, cupping. Dry needling is another sort of technique that is part of acupuncture that has been derived and developed to treat mostly musculoskeletal pains and aches, and it's very effective. What else? Moxibustion is probably one that is less familiar for people. Moxibustion, it's sort of a two-part word. Moxi refers to moxa, is dried processed mugwort leaves. The bustion part is that we add a heat component to it. Usually the processed moxa, the processed mugwort, is burned. That can be directly on the skin or through a needle or hovering over the skin in a form of moxa stick. So there's various forms of moxibustion as well. And that generally deals with the yang aspects or the lack thereof yang in terms of tonifying the whole system in the body. So that's also within the EAM toolbox that is perhaps a little bit more less familiar for the general public. There's the movement practice that goes from Qigong, Tai Chi, or really any, you know, movement practices that suits the body. And then there's, of course, the dietary aspects, right? And lastly, the cosmology limb, where, you know, we are organisms within a bigger context. All human beings are. If that resonates with some people, there's a way to sort of treat through a cosmological aspect as well, which I am not very great at, and I'm learning about it more myself at the moment, actually. So there's just so much and so vast, and I am constantly humbled and always learning.
Yeah, I love that. And that's what we want for our practitioners, right? Is always learning and always being humbled by the field itself.
Curious.
Always curious. I agree. Yeah, hearing all of those modalities honestly sounds so exciting. And not just knowing and learning more about the modalities, but also just thinking of, imagine what we can do here in the United States if we are more accepting of these practices and these modalities. Like the amount of options that we can give to the general population. And like you said, right, this might work for you, this might not work for you, but how do we know if we're not open to it and we're not...
Or have no access
to it.
The same way that we do, you know, your PCP,
yeah.
Or your, right? So there's some logistical aspects there.
Well, actually, logistically, how is that ratio between, I guess, acupuncture and Eastern medicine practitioners in relation to, I guess, our population here in the United States? If you have.
Oh, that's a very good question. I'm going to be looking that up. I actually don't know. I want to say since my licensure is state-based, there's probably some discrepancy state to state. I believe when I was like number like 7,000 something in the New York State, so we have a lot of access. And then, you know, the 7,000+ back in the day, it's probably more now, but you know, there's probably a higher concentration in the city, I would say, than, you know, rural areas. But I do remember distinctly sort of searching at looking at other states and licensure at other states. I believe Oklahoma, at least as of a few years back, has zero acupuncturist registered. Right? So there you go. It's just,
you know,
crazy.
One of my coworkers, she moved from Oklahoma 3 years ago. And it's funny that you say this because the first thing she did within her first month here was get an acupuncture session. I guess.
Because she can.
Yeah, because she
has access.
I know. Yeah.
For the first time.
Yeah. See, this is why access is so important. And other than access, you know, making it available to people, sometimes physically it's not possible yet, right? It's not logistically possible yet, I guess, like in Oklahoma. But the transference of information, the access to information, I think is very important too. That's why I've been so excited for us to have this conversation, because just having an informed knowledge about our options for our conditions and our pain is, I think, is so powerful, right? That's why they say knowledge is power. And that's why it's so amazing what you do, Dr. Kuei. And I wanted to talk about Nava Wellness. Can you tell us more about it and what services you provide and, I guess, how to get in contact with your office?
Nava Wellness is my private practice here in New York City, right across from the Flatiron Building on 21st and Broadway. I offer really all EAM services minus the cosmology aspect. So I do acupuncture, moxa, herbal medicine consultation, cupping, tuina, which is a Chinese medical massage modality, and movement and lifestyle recommendations with all my patients as appropriate. So sometimes my role as a EAM practitioner, as a doctor of acupuncture and Chinese medicine, is to sort of be the puppeteer, be directing traffic a little bit, be putting information in people's minds and pockets and access so that they can make more informed choices. And it is not unusual for me to say, you know, why don't you go get some imaging? Let's get more data. Let's utilize, again, all the tools within the medicinal arsenal that we have today, right? East, west, north, south, whatever we want to call it. And let's get more data, because the more information that I get to sort of synthesize with my knowledge and my background in the EAM world, I think the better the outcome in my patients. And I think that's ultimately health care in its literal term.
Yeah, I agree. Super agree. And that's the main premise of this season that I want to let everyone know and be more informed about. I read this post once where it says, what do you call Western medicine that works? And what do you call Eastern medicine that works? It's just medicine, right?
Yeah, and it's medicine that works.
It's medicine that works. Yeah.
And it's quality of life improved, and it's a healthier overall population that leads to less taxation into the Medicare system later on, right? Like, there is a whole expansive socioeconomic expansion that we can probably talk about for hours on end.
Yeah, I agree.
The medicine.
I agree.
It really seeps into so many facets.
I agree. And that's what we want to happen, right? Is for both worlds to seep into each other, for this integration. And like we previously talked, that our hope one day is that Eastern medicine and Western medicine can just, you know, be right across each other and refer to each other. Well, I wanted to end this with a question. You know, we've talked a lot about the benefits of acupuncture when it comes to pain and infertility issues. And I think a big part of it that I wanted to focus on too is the feeling and the concept of pain, right? I remember one professor told me before that you have to be very mindful of pain because it can be very apparent or not, because not all wounds are visible, right? Some wounds are invisible and some pains invisible. And he said when it comes to chronic pain or even physical pain, its twin sister is always emotional pain, because you always ask, why am I in pain? What do I do about this? What can I do about it, right?
And absolutely.
And so many go through life and just walking the streets in pain that may or may not be apparent, maybe apparent in the blood test and maybe not. Maybe they're hiding it from their family members. Maybe they don't want to accept themselves that they're in pain. And they've tried everything and it may not have worked. What would be your message to someone who has been in pain for a very long time or has been battling with a physical condition and has seemed to try everything within the realm of Western medicine, but is very hesitant or dubious about the practice of acupuncture, Eastern medicine as a whole? What would be your message for that person?
Sure. For this particular patient population that you're describing, sort of chronically being in this pain state, really what pain does is taxes the nervous system and it puts people in this fight or flight all the time, which is ultimately not sustainable. And until we sort of, again, remove some of those stagnation or traffic or noise, this patient may not actually realize what sort of reduced pain or even pain-free living could look like. Right. So it's common to have someone in chronic pain to go through years of testing, medication, surgical intervention, rule out or narrow down differential diagnosis. And then after this long road down this diseased state of being, I would say, why not try a relatively non-invasive modality like acupuncture and EAM modalities? You know, it seems like the obvious next step, because in all honesty, for this particular patient population, what do you have to lose?
I agree. And you don't know, you might just find out that it's the medicine that works for you, right?
Absolutely.
Dr. Kuei, this is such a heartwarming conversation. And not only did I learn much more about acupuncture and Eastern medicine, but it just opens my mind to the possibilities that we can have when it comes to changing people's lives and quality of lives, right? And
absolutely,
you do that every day with your practice and your expertise. So thank you so much for coming on to talk more about your
field. Thank you for having me.
Of course. This was such a pleasure, such an honor. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you again. It's been my absolute pleasure to have this conversation with you.